In this mini lecture, we're discussing a rhetorical perspective on persuasion. In other words, we're inquiring into how effectively the available means of persuasion might be used for a target audience. And to use that, we need to have some understanding of what is effective and ineffective. And here we tend to be overconfident. The truth is that strategic communication is more complicated than it seems, and it's important for us to recognize that. We've seen our own mood change as a result of communication, or we've seen someone else change as a result of our own communication, and therefore assume we know what works persuasively. But what works to change mood in a short term is not an indication of what will change behavior in the long term. Nor is what works for us or our friends a very good indication of what will work for others. So we want to be on guard against assuming that we know more about how persuasion works than it does. Even people who do persuasion professionally, PR people, advertisers, marketers, managers, and yes, persuasion teachers, tend to assume that we know more about persuasion than we actually do. And even people who do persuasion scholarship for a living tend to know less than we would think that they would know about this topic. For example, Petty and Cacioppo note that there is an inability of modern research to produce consistently reliable predictions of persuasion. Himmelfarb and Eagley conclude that there are few simple and direct generalizations that could be made. The major problem, Petty and Cacioppo write, is that there is surprisingly little agreement concerning how traditional variables affect persuasion. In other words, general conclusions about persuasion are insupportable. I think this point is driven home most powerfully in Petty and Cacioppo's work when they write, "Existing literature supported the view that nearly every independent variable studied increased persuasion in some situations, had no effect in others, and decreased persuasion in still other contexts." So, if you had a persuasive strategy that worked in the past, don't assume that it will work in a different context in the future. The fact that it was effective in that context at that point in time means little, because it might have, in fact, the best available scientific research suggests that that same strategy might have no effect in another situation and even be counterproductive or boomerang in other situations. So being on guard against assuming that we know more than we do about persuasion is what the purpose of this mini lecture is. We want to try, of course, to drive toward an understanding of how persuasion works. We want to try to understand how these thousands and thousands of studies and dozens of theories of persuasion, how we might be able to use them, how they might be rescued from the uselessness that their apparent contradiction places them in. And so we'll need some theories that will allow us to explain why what appear to be inconsistent results are in fact consistent. To do that, we need a good model of persuasion that will allow us to see elements of persuasion that are in common that are not necessarily the ones that are most obviously in common. More about that to follow in the next mini lecture, but for now we'll say, really, our understanding of 20th century research, to understand how it is valuable in spite of the fact that on the face it doesn't seem that valuable, will rely heavily on returning to Aristotle's ancient idea that rhetoric is the art of observing in any particular case the available means of persuasion. Means of persuasion which are available in some cases are not available in other cases. And it's only when we acknowledge this, that there are different purposes of our attempts to change others, will we ever fully understand how contemporary persuasion research actually has something to say in spite of its apparently contradictory findings.